to the Ion Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Troll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. This is in studio.
This is weird.
This is really weird.
I don't like it.
We don't usually look at each other. Matt Moore, not on a Skype line, in my hotel room.
Sexy.
Both wearing pants, so that's awkward. Well, I guess it makes it less awkward for you. I'm uncomfortable in pants. We're here in Miami for game one of the finals, game two of the finals.
South Beach is excited, man.
South Beach is really excited to have us.
I haven't been there, but...
No, it's palpable, the interest right now.
Got a big... Nike has spent a lot of money on billboard.
Yes, Nike.
There's a gigantic LeBron face on the side of the building.
Yeah, and it says, like, witness history, and it's got the 2013 MVP check mark. I wonder what accomplishments are under there they just haven't unveiled yet.
Let's see, dropped $50,000 in 20 minutes at Live, whatever the club's name is.
That might be one. Are you excited for this? I'm excited in the finals.
I'm excited the more, once I started getting into the basketball, I got really excited.
Yeah.
I've been talking all week, and by talking, I mean pissing off Spurs fans all week.
That'll happen.
Talking about, they're not compelling, and they're just not, and everyone gets really annoyed at this talk, and I'm just like, I'm trying to explain... There is a reason the ratings are low. You cannot tell me that they are compelling and they right. are interesting, and people just, like people will seek out things that even if they're in small markets, they'll pay attention
to. Thunder
right.
do great for ratings.
Right.
Because Kevin Durant is a marketable star.
Yep.
He doesn't deflect attention. He's right. got great marketing campaigns. Russell Westbrook, everyone likes to be angry about him.
Exactly. Kendrick
nobody's,
Perkins. Yeah.
Even though he's French and we're in America, nobody's angry about Tony Parker.
Nobody. No, everyone just like, really good point guard.
Yeah, really
Tim
good.
Tim Duncan, really great yeah. really great guy. Like, there's just, there's nothing to be upset about with them about. There's nothing to be drawn to them about. You're not like, what does this mean for their legacy? Their legacy is already cemented.
Right.
They won all these titles.
Yeah.
So there's nothing really to draw them. But on the basketball side of things.
Oh.
It's beautiful.
Fascinating.
It's going to be really, really compelling.
What I like about the series is last time it was contrasting styles. It was Pacers versus Heat, contrasting styles. Spurs versus Grizzlies, contrasting styles. And now we get the same style. I mean, they basically play the same way, tweaks here and there. But it's the same, like, open, fast pace, get threes, good ball movement, all that kind of stuff. Get into the middle of the floor. And we get to see who does it better. I anticipate that LeBron James will do it better than Tony Parker, but it's kind of the beauty of it all. The shots have to fall.
You've been wavering. You picked Heat in seven at 3.4% offense.
A gigantic 3.4%, I might add.
That .4 is really what shows your level of
Yeah, favor. I'm just not going to go three.
Right.
No, I'll kick it up. And I'm not going four.
No.
But I'll kick it up a notch.
You know, I've been the most bold about this series, which makes sense since I am the worst NBA pundit, according to Deadspin.
Yeah.
Of the ESPN and CBS, which, by the way, thanks for not tracking NBC or anybody else, so it's just me.
It's just us.
I'm the worst person in the playoffs at picking these series. By the way, can I just take a second and say,
sure.
F you Nets.
Yeah.
F you Nuggets, F.U. Knicks.
The Knicks, yes.
That's the one that hurts me. I'm willing to accept the fact that the Grizzlies beat the Clippers.
Sure.
A lot of people missed that one.
Sure.
Nets, Bulls was a coin flip. Nuggets, Warriors, a lot of people missed that one. It really caught everybody by surprise, except for Kimberger, which I missed that he is. But the Knicks one, I'm still angry at. So that's got me anyways. Anyway, I'm the most confident in this because I look at the matchups and I say to myself, are they going to be able to defend at the rim the way the Pacers did? Are the Spurs going to be able to do that?
Right.
And the answer is no. Are they going to be able to collapse the lane like they did against the Grizzlies, against Ray Allen and Shane Battier? No. And lastly, does Kawhi Leonard have... I love Kawhi Leonard. I think he's a fantastic player. I think he's going to be a Defensive Player of the Year candidate within 3 years.
Yeah.
There is nothing he's going to be able to do against LeBron.
Well, this is the reason that I have such pause, is that... The Spurs shoot the ball really well,
yeah.
And shooting has proven to be a very important thing in the playoffs. I mean,
in basketball, basketball
like,
helps.
But the crap is like, it's always like, oh, defense wins championships. Oh, you can't get owned on the boards. No, you have to hit shots. Like,
yeah.
Defense wins championships unless you can't cover the corner three.
Yeah,
and these two teams get to the corner better than anybody, better than even the Warriors. Like, the Warriors have a lot of above the break threes and just hit them at an insane rate. These teams get to the corners, they get efficient shots, they get to the rim, and sometimes it doesn't go.
Yeah.
Like, sometimes if it doesn't fall for the Heat, which it didn't, I mean, it's a little different, but it didn't fall in the Eastern Conference Finals because they're facing the best defense in the league.
Right.
When it doesn't fall, what do they do? And if it doesn't fall and it is falling for the Spurs, How do you adjust?
I also wonder, I do wonder about this. I think Wade's going to overhelp, but I think that Cole, Chalmers, Ray Allen, Shane Battier, I think most of the guys are going to stay home. I think they're going to help with the elbows enough, but I think they're going to stay home on the corners. I don't think they're going to be – I think that they're a smarter defense than Memphis. And I think that they'll have a better – they'll do a better job of frustrating the Spurs than maybe any team outside of Golden State has.
Yeah, it's – I mean, the Grizzlies' defense was just chaos. Like, you try to create chaos on the perimeter, and you've got, you know, a support system inside, and you can get away with that unless you can't hit outside shots.
Right.
And – with the Heat, it's more of like design chaos, you know? Let Wade or let LeBron play free safety, let them play the passing lanes, force those traps to get those cross-court passes or those looping passes out of the trap, and then have your athletes take advantage of it. And it's, I mean, you can't really trap Tony Parker, but the size advantage they have if they get to trap him with LeBron and Battier or Wade and Battier, that could make a huge difference.
You can trap a little bit. I honestly wonder if they're going to be even more aggressive on him, because you can't. It's if you start going passive and you become more and more passive, you're just opening yourself up to that two dribble jumper off the off of the pick.
Right.
You're just opening yourself up to him driving. You almost have to get more and more aggressive and dare them to beat you 5-on-4 and have the rest of your defense be so disciplined. And they rotate on a string really well.
Yeah. That's
the thing that... And then you go back and forth, right?
So yeah, like, right. Well, that's the 3.4%.
Yeah.
That's the thing with, like, I love Spo talking about, hey, we've been working on our pick-and-roll defense for 3 years since we got this group together, and it's going to be tested, and we trust the plan. We trust the execution. We trust the defensive system, and it's kind of fun. It's fun for both sides to say, like, hey, this is what we do. We trust it. This is what we're going to do. Let's see what happens. Because it's that whole idea of, you know, they know what we're going to run. We know what they're going to run. Let's see who's tough enough to execute it properly.
Yeah. Here's one I want to ask you about, because I've been wrestling with this one. What do you do with Shane Battier in the series?
You play him. You where? Absolutely play him.
But where?
At the four.
Against who?
3-4. I would play him against Splitter.
Wow.
I would say, Tiago Splitter, you want to win an NBA Finals? Go for it.
Yeah.
I mean, why not? You stretch him out on defense.
I kind of want to see him play. I kind of want them to finally reward Shane and be like, you get to move back to the three.
Yeah.
And let him work on, I like him guarding Manu. I like him guarding Green. I like him guarding Kawhi. I love the idea of him being the help guy to recover, because he's not going to overhelp. He's not going to be Tony Allen lunging in the lane. He'll be smart about it. He can make the hustle plays. I like that. And then I honestly, like, let LeBron handle, like, Tiago Splitter and just block him every time.
See, I would like, I like LeBron helping against Tiago Splitter.
Yeah.
Because I'm not a Tiago person. I think I'm pretty on record of saying that. I understand why someone might be, but he doesn't do it for me. He's no Nikola Pekovic for me. Like, there's no humor involved. I think it's great that he's Brazilian and he has nice hair. That's about it. That's all I mean, he can play pick and roll defense.
He's got those hollow cheeks that freak me out. I don't like those. I don't like those.
Like Skeletor cheeks.
I hate those things.
Yeah.
He's really nice to talk to.
Yeah, great guy. But I don't, like, he's skilled. He's a guy you can have in your rotation. I just don't think, like, he's that big of a weapon. So if you're going to have a double team to really force him into turnovers, I would have LeBron helping down. And plus, I don't think you want LeBron in danger of picking up fouls, like cheap fouls, while fighting for position with him. And that's the reason I would have Battier on him.
I like Bosch guarding Duncan, actually.
Yeah, I think it's a solid matchup. Chris Bosch is good on defense. Like, he's really good. Yeah. And that's something people need to recognize. I know he's soft and he doesn't rebound and all that crap, but he's really good on defense.
Yeah, he makes weird faces when he wins the championship. Yeah. And there's champagne poured on him.
Yes.
But
video bombs.
But still, I really also like, you know, the Spurs kill Grizzlies with the Bonner Parker pick and roll.
Yeah.
And Bosch is going to be like, nope, I got this. It's cool.
Yeah.
Chris isn't going to, or Bonner's not getting the shot up. That's fine. Right. And I like that. I like LeBron on the help chase down block on Tony from behind.
Yeah.
There's all these things now, like, whether it happens or not. The line's 5.
Who do you think will win game 1?
I think the Heat are going to win.
I think the Spurs are going to win.
I
That I'm confident in. I would put my confidence in, like, 90%. that I think the Spurs
will win. The action's coming heavy on San Antonio.
And they never, well, yeah, that worries me. They never lose, right, with 5 days rest or more. Aren't they like 7-0 in the Big Three era for San Antonio? It's history. Never lose. That means they'll never lose with this situation.
And the Heat, how many game ones have the Heat lost?
Yeah.
They lost, you know, they lost game one to Indiana. They lost game one to Chicago. They lost game one to Chicago in 2011. They lost game one to the Thunder in 2012.
Yeah.
They lost one of the other ones, I think. But yeah, like, they always adjust. They don't necessarily come out of the gate hot. I looked at how San Antonio played in that Warrior series in Game 1 and looked at that and said, that doesn't look like... I think they need to be in rhythm. I think that they need to be working that offense and be comfortable with everybody's at. And I feel like it's been so long.
I think the thing is that there's a plan. And whether there's rust or not, whether the shots don't fall in the first quarter or the first half, the game plan will be great.
But I don't... The thing... We gotta talk about this. So... I've written, like, in the past 2 years, I think I've written non-news articles. I've probably written maybe 10,000 to 15,000 words on Greg Popovich.
Because
I love the man
much.
His approach
is my favorite.
Everything that I like about the idea of you build an organization and you have the same philosophy from your general manager and your owner all the way down to your ball boys in the D-League. Like, everything is the same. Everybody's on the same page. I love his tactical adjustments. I hate how he treats reporters, but that's fine.
How he treats reporters.
I liked it until I had to deal with it. And now I'm like, I don't like this anymore. This isn't fun. I want to go home. So I'm not a Greg Popovich hater. There's this perception that he always has the answer. And I'm kind of like, if Popovich always has the answer, then why haven't the Spurs won the title since 2007?
Well, you still have to execute. You still have to have healthy players.
But part of it also is, in the series that they've lost, he has faced situations in which he could not make adjustments. And with this roster specifically, in my opinion, there is a point where they cannot make any adjustments past, like, they get to this level, and then you're done. Like, this is as good as you can do it. Now, they've gone further, obviously, with this team than they have in previous years.
Right.
But I wonder how much of that has been the teams that they faced and just the opportunity that's been presented with them in specific situations. I feel pretty good about Eric Spoelstra in this chess match. I think he's got a really good opportunity.
I do too.
Because I think that Spoelstra's ability – Spoelstra talked about this today about how they built a team that is able to do almost anything.
Yeah.
Like, the Pacers almost beat them because they were like, you can't go big. And the Heat were like, well, we can go big enough.
Yeah.
And so they've got all of these adjustments. I really like the idea coming out of the gate, especially – of the Heat having a game plan that's one step ahead of San Antonio.
I did like what Spo said, is that he was basically, to paraphrase, he said he was happy that they didn't have more time to prepare because they didn't want to, you know, confuse themselves.
Right.
They didn't want to overthink it,
right.
Which means he has a game plan, he's confident in it, and they like their system, and they probably get to run their system a lot more. The thing about it is, I feel like the Spurs have a game plan, and they have execution. And you're right, they've gotten to a point where they couldn't adjust to something. But it's rare that lack of adjustment happens right away in their series. I mean, they won the first two games against the Thunder last year. Thunder adjusted, and they didn't have an adjustment. It's not that he didn't adjust. I don't think they had one for that particular situation.
Right.
I just don't know. Like, what do you do to stop the three of the best offensive players in the league running a great set? I mean, sometimes you're just beat.
Yeah.
And I think that he's able to recognize when he doesn't have something, there's just nothing you can do. And that's why I think the game plan coming out will be great. I think the Heat will adjust. And if the Heat beat the Spurs, maybe we can get everybody on board with this idea that Eric Spoelstra is a great coach. Like, he's a genius. He's a robot. He doesn't answer anything interesting in playoff interviews.
I feel like I'm the only person. I feel like I'm taking crazy pills, is what I feel like. I feel like I'm taking crazy pills because I listen to his interviews and I have like 5 or 6 things that I'm like, oh, that's really interesting. Like, he talked about like the bands that they're wearing today, the armbands for some sort of charity cause. He talked about like I drugged and pulled like the novel Guts by Chuck Palahniuk. I drug out an answer from him about small ball.
Yeah.
And he finally relented and was like, well, we had to do a lot of things against Indiana that we didn't want to do.
Yeah.
and we feel like this is an opportunity for us to get back to what we want to do. He answers things that are basketball related. He does have certain catchphrases, but I know almost every coach that does that.
Yeah, no.
And the whole like identity thing, no coach ever wants to be the one to make adjustments. Like, nobody ever wants to do that.
Right.
Popovich is always like he just basically doesn't answer the question. He just
his pregame and postgame interviews, I think you'll have a different answer.
Yeah.
Well, no, you'll get the same answer. It'll be our identity, our game, our triggers, our system. Like, that's what it's gonna be. And that's when he's the Spobot. Like, that's when nothing interesting comes out of his mouth.
Yeah.
I think when there's time to relax, like at a shoot around or a practice, or after they've clinched something, then you'll get answers. But before then, and it's not, I mean, you're not going to give away your secrets. You're not going to say, hey, this is our adjustment we're planning tonight.
I always think that this is weird. Is there really, if they told us everything, would it really help either team?
I mean, probably not. I doubt that they...
Like, if I talked to Spo pregame, and I asked Spo, hey, in the scrum, if I just said, hey, are you planning on doubling Duncan from the wing or the corner? Or the wing of the edge. And he tells me, is someone going to tweet that? Is someone then going to run to Popovich and say, look what they're going to do?
What do you think Mike Budenholzer was here for? He's not a lead assistant. He's a social media expert.
Social media expert.
Yeah.
So I never understand what the idea is with this idea that this information is so privileged.
Right.
Because we've talked to most of the coaches will always talk about how, like, well, it's basketball and we do the same things and there's no new tricks to it. And I'm always like, you run like sets that involve 17 different motions.
Yeah.
A professional player is running at high precision angles.
There are no tricks to it, but we don't run any of this stuff in the regular season because we're saving it all.
But we don't run any of this stuff in the regular season. We practice it within an inch of its life and we've designed these playbooks that are like intensely complicated specifically because of this. I'm like, this is professional basketball. And I get why, because you want to protect it, but I just don't know how much of an edge it gives.
Well,
I'd love to see a coach just be like, here's our entire game plan. Let me tell you everything.
I would be shocked if the Spurs scouting department or if the Heat scouting department were presented with a play before the game tonight and said, look, this is what they're planning on doing. And they were like, what the hell? We've never seen this before.
What are these flankers?
How do they get a second basketball on the court?
Is that a helicopter? What? He's driving a car through a plane. What is?
It just becomes Fast Six.
Exactly.
Like.
This is the Fast Six play.
How do you bring down a tank? Let's.
Guys, they got a tank.
They've got a David West.
So I don't know what the big advantage is, but that's the way it is, and that's fine. What do you think of Chalmers in this series?
I like him in every series. I really do.
I think
he's a great role player.
Yeah.
And I think, people freak out that he thinks he's a top 10 point guard. I honestly think if you gave him the responsibilities of most of the top 10 point guards and gave him a team that wasn't filled with LeBron James and Dwayne Wade, I think he would come out and I think he would play really well and blow away people's expectations. I don't know that he would be a top 10 point guard definitively, but I think that he would be in the conversation. Like, he's super talented. He's very confident, obviously. He can shoot. I think he can drive. I think he's a decent enough passer. Like, I think he's really good.
Against the Celtics and the Thunder last year, and sometimes throughout this playoff series, there are times when the defense is so preoccupied with Wade, James, and Bosch that Chalmers just says, F it, I'm going to the basket.
Yeah.
And when he scores, the deflation by the other team
is
just like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Chalmers?
He gets to the corner, he gets to the wing, and he's deadly.
Yeah,
and he shot 42% from three this year.
And I still feel like people are like, oh, it's just Norris Cole. And I'm like, you need to stop Norris Cole.
Right.
Like, especially in the break, they're like, oh, it's just Norris Cole. He'll probably make a mistake. And I'm like, no, he's going to either hit that pull-up jumper or he's taking it to the rack. Like, you need to guard Norris Cole.
Right.
The Heat have a deep team somehow. I don't know how this happens.
Which is weird because once they got the big three, they weren't going to have any depth at
all.
They were never going to have a bench.
But it's amazing. It is kind of amazing, though, when you got three guys making that much money. And then you go, holy God, they've got...
Well, here's the thing. They already had Chalmers on a rookie deal, right?
They re-signed Haslam.
Re-signed Haslam. They got Mike Miller, who is still, like, effective when they put him on the floor. It's just his limbs are attached by Velcro, so you can't play him that much.
They got Ray Allen for mid-level, I think.
Yeah, they got Ray Allen at a discount. They got Birdman at a discount. Guys...
James Norris Cole.
Veterans want to win.
Yeah.
And that's... I mean, Ray Allen talked about that after Game 7 the other night. He said... this kind of validates his decision. Like, when he during the offseason, he sat down with his family and with his, like, advisors and his close friends, and that's what they decided. He wanted to trust that he could win, and he didn't want to be fighting, you know, tooth and nail. Not that he's not a fighter and he's not competitive, but he didn't want to be in an uphill battle. Like, he wanted to be comfortable to help finish out his career, and that's usually what veteran players do. That's what Mitch Richmond did. That's what Glenn Rice did. Like, this is what they do.
Gary Payton,
yeah.
Well, it's one where it's like, you know, like, soldiers, they'll battle out of like, under incredible circumstances. If you ask them, would you rather do that or would you rather have air support?
Right.
I'd rather have air support. I'd like the tanks and the air support.
Yeah.
Like, that's fine. That'd be good. Bring in the artillery.
Everybody wants to be Rambo for a little bit, but not every time.
Not every time.
You won't be Rambo for 17 years.
Exactly.
You want to be Rambo enough for 2 sequels and, you know, your own spinoff.
Who's going to have a better series, Dwayne Wade or Monta Ginobili?
I would say Wade. I think he'll be healthy enough to have 3 good games. And that's with me expecting it to go 7. I think half of his games in the series will be good.
It's a really interesting question, and that's a big X factor. Is if Manu just decides, I'm emptying the chambers on everything. Yeah. I'm giving everything I possibly
can. I'm really hoping that's how he plays. Because I'd love creative Manu. I love aggressive Manu. Like,
I want to see clear outs for Manu versus Wade. I really want to see it. Really want to see it.
My ligaments hurt just thinking about that.
Like, and like, and Manu dribbling up and them clearing out and James in the corner being like, are you sure? Because I'm right here. Are you sure? And Wade's like, no, I got it. And James is like, are you sure?
How upset are you that we don't get our... After that incident at the end of the season where they waived Steven Jackson, we really could have had a Birdman-Steven Jackson face-off. That wouldn't have resulted in anything, but they would have jawed at each other.
God, that would have been good. Yeah, that's the other thing about the Spurs, is they don't fight. It's really disappointing.
They don't need to. It's like you were talking about in the Grizzlies series, where you're like, no, the Grizzlies complimented them.
Yeah.
Like, they're just like, these guys are really good.
Yep.
Sometimes you're too good to hate.
Yeah.
Like, it's just an acceptance, and you can either out-execute them, or you accept that they're better than
but
you.
But it's disappointing, because, like, there should be that.
No,
should
I think we should give Matt Bonner, you know, steroids, and let him get a little roid rage in, and...
The Red Hulk.
See if he tries to, like, spear somebody with a sandwich.
The Red Hulk. Spear someone with a sandwich. Deadly Capicola.
Yeah, some deadly Capicola.
I mean, I guess if we're looking at it, there are some on the bench guys that wouldn't shock me if they got into it. Corey Joseph is one.
Yeah, Corey Joseph, well, no, he's Canadian. Canadians don't fight. That's why you have to give Matt Bonner's not Canadian. That's why you'd have to give, like, Tristan Thompson, you know, steroids to get him angry. He's just too happy. He's like, oh, I love rebounding. I'm going to rebound.
So I should start writing the Andrew Wiggins as a choker right now.
Oh, God, yeah. He's not built to win.
Not tough enough. I don't know, Splitter Birdman fight might be kind of fun.
Would Splitter even fight?
He might get his ass kicked. That's what might happen.
Danny Green, I actually could see being scrappy.
He won't put up with it.
No.
That could get interesting with Wade.
He's kind of a tough guy.
Wade is, as our colleague Greg Doyle pointed out, Wade is the dirtiest player in the
game. Apparently.
I will say Wade is as dirty as anybody else. I've always said that. I was like, look, man, he's like Chris Paul, Dwayne Wade, the guys that are insane about winning.
Yeah,
they'll do whatever.
Yeah, Chris Paul is a kind of a dirty player. Yeah. Like, and KG's kind of like those competitive guys that can't scale it back at all.
Mm-hmm.
Like, those guys are like, yeah, I hit a guy in the nuts, I'll be fine. Kobe used to be that way. Like, Kobe used to smack Manu every time he blocked his shot. Like, he would flail back and hit him in the head, and then he got in trouble for it, so he had to stop. But, like, some of those guys will do that.
Everybody talks about how, like, the big fights and everything like that, but what they don't see is, man, the dirtiest plays in basketball are the, you come off the pick and roll and someone pulls on your wrist and your arm,
yeah,
and, like, is trying to pull it out of its socket. It's, you're battling for a rebound and somebody's holding you down when you're trying to jump and drives you sideways. Like, those are the type of plays that you tend to feel like those are really important.
Someone, like Jan Mahimi in the last series, I think it might have been in game 5. I think Bosch was supposed to rotate over to, like, a baseline drive by maybe Stevenson or Paul George. And who knows if he would, like, block the shot or cut him off, but he didn't get to because Jan Mahimi just grabbed his wrist and just held him, and he couldn't get over there. And it was like an easy layup, and no one called the foul. Like, no one saw it, no one called the foul, but I could see it, and I was like, that's a kind of a dirty play, but my God, it's genius. It worked. Like, that stuff just happens.
That was why Bruce Bowen was so effective versus Steve Nash. Everyone's like, oh, Bruce Bowen is an amazing defender. I'm like, he's grabbing Nash's arm.
He might be sticking in with, like, bamboo shoots under his fingernails. Why do you think he's licking his hands all the time? He's getting the blood off.
Gross. Everybody got fired today.
George Karl, that is dumb. D-U-M dumb. Like, that's just stupid. It's just stupid. I get it, because he's a lame duck coach. He wasn't going to be happy as a lame duck coach, so you don't want a guy that's unhappy. You know how you make him happy? Give him a contract extension, because he's a really good coach. Keep him around.
Do you want George Karl if you're going through a rebuild?
He seemed to be okay with it 2 years ago. He was pretty excited about it, right?
But he didn't. He doesn't play. He doesn't play the young guys. He doesn't.
So,
and if you're in a position where you're like, I got to find out if these guys are any good, at some point,
this is the mentality I have: is that if the guys are that good, they will play.
Yeah.
And an
Fareed
example
proved that.
Yeah, Fareed proved that. Like, Fareed got a lot of minutes when he was healthy.
And Fournier.
Yeah, Fournier got a chance. The example I always have is, when I started covering the Kings, Omri Caspi was a rookie, and there was word that they were going to start Francisco Garcia over him. And people got mad. They're like, Omri Caspi should be starting ahead of him. And I thought, if Omri Caspi can't outplay Francisco Garcia right away in practice, in scrimmages, to prove that he should be starting, that he probably isn't good enough to start.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's just the case. Sometimes there are coaches who just won't give in ever. Like, Scott Skiles was kind of that guy, except for Brandon Jennings, he sort of had to do that. But every once in a while, like, guys just have to prove it.
I think the Warriors series caught them off guard I think they genuinely thought Karl got outcoached in that series, and he did.
Yeah,
he did. I think that really caused problems for them, because it's like, as much as I don't like the playoff narrative that he can't win the playoffs, I think it's a little ridiculous.
Yeah, I don't buy that.
You don't have anything to fall back on if you say, wow, he really got outcoached in this playoff series.
Right.
You want to be able to say, but look at it all the times he's been successful.
Yeah.
And with Karl, you're like, wow, he really got outcoached in the series for like the 10th time in a row.
Yeah.
And I think that it gets awkward, and that was part of it. I do think most of it was just the instability.
Sure.
And it basically, here's what it comes down to. If Brian Colangelo wasn't bad at his job, Masai Ujiri and George Karl would be back with the Nuggets.
Right.
That's all it comes down
Nobody
to.
Nobody else was going after Ujiri to
that,
say, like,
not that much.
You need to have this giant contract.
Yeah.
You need $3 million a year for 5 years to come build our team.
And I honestly have a hard time, as much as I think the Nuggets are being cheap and they have a reputation thereof, I have a hard time blaming them, because I'm just like, I would not pay an executive $3 million a year.
I thought, Tom Ziller wrote about this on SB Nation, I thought he had a great point of, the low contracts for the best executives are ridiculous. I mean, what was he making? He was making $500,000a year? For a guy that's shaping your team?
Yeah.
Like that, I mean, this is not, this is an example of how that can go poorly, but Jeff Petrie was making, I think, 8 times that for the Kings, you know? And he became really bad at his job, but there was a certain point where he was worth that kind of money. And, you know, $4 million to a great coach, $5 million to a great coach, $2-3 million for a top executive, like, in the grand scheme of things, that doesn't seem that bad to me. Now, that's also not my money.
Right.
But there's this, like, standard, and it might be shifting, and I think you have to get out ahead of the shift.
Yeah, I will say, I believe this about Ujiri and about Karl, that things are going to get bad in Denver, because I have almost never seen a situation where a team has let go or fired a good coach or executive, and the person that came in was definitively better. It doesn't happen.
Well, with coaching, the only thing I can think of is the Pistons?
Pistons.
Yeah, with Carlisle and Larry Brown.
And Saunders. And
that was the only time, like, I can really remember where it's like,
yeah,
and that's the exception. So you have to be hoping, you have to hope that you have that kind of situation, which they don't.
And looking at the executives, I mean, I think Pete D'Alessandro would be a terrific job, like a terrific choice to just go ahead and let him do that. Have him appoint an interim guy to work with Karl as kind of the intermediary. That's fine. It'd be terrific if they, now that he's gone, you know, Shaw, I think, obviously, would be a really great fit. Lionel Hollins is a there's talk of
those. I'm kind of intrigued though
those
by
two
that
switch,
idea.
Man, you Hollins is gonna kick the crap out of me if I have to cover him for an entire year. He's gonna beat me up in an alley, and I like Lionel, and I enjoy
three games
to him.
In. He's gonna show you his disfigured fingers and be like, "You want these to be yours?"
God, he's gonna be bad because I'm just gonna be screaming. Why?
You're gonna say like, you know, the synergy numbers show your pick and roll defense.
Exactly.
The cinema? Who?
What?
The cinema? Why are they showing our games at the movie theater?
I don't know what that is, but totally play possessions at a premium. Doesn't know what that means.
It's such a bad. I think it's a really bad direction.
I like the idea. Well, I can't decide whether I like the. I like conceptually the idea of Carl with the Clippers. I don't know whether they're going to buy in because he hasn't won the playoffs.
I mean, that's a. I guess that's a concern just because it hasn't happened. He has won in the playoffs. Like, people freak out. They're like, oh, the 94, you know, postseason, the Sonics got bounced in the first round.
Two years
later, they go to the finals and like, took it to the 72-win Bulls. Like, they are capable of being successful if you give him great players. He has the right mentality. Like, corner threes, get to the basket, get to the free throw line. Like, that's the NBA now. He didn't have anybody that could knock down shots.
And God, the Clippers with that system where they're only shooting threes or getting to the rim. Chris Paul with a Gary Payton.
Somebody asked
approach.
Me what would be the lob city of George Karl went there. I said it'd be the lob Death Star. Like that's the escalation of the whole thing.
I really like the idea of Shaw with the Nuggets. I think it'd be good for them to have if he abandons the triangle.
Yeah, you would have to, right? Well, they don't have anybody in the post that can run. I mean, Kufos could run it.
JaVale, Fareed, and Ty.
Actually, I do want to see the triangle now, just out of pure curiosity. 10 games in, I would lose interest and I would stop watching them because the fascination would be gone. But it'd be fun for 10 games. I could deal with that.
Oh, man.
I also don't cover them.
Right, exactly.
This would be like getting your kid like the new G.I. Joe toy or whatever the hell kids play with now, and then like pick it up, play with it for 5 minutes, and like, all right, I'm done with this, and they run off and play a video game. That would be me with Brian Shaw in the triangle.
Exactly. I'm done with this. This game sucks. My wife is pissed because one thing I told her when we were trying to decide where to move, we decided on Denver because I was like, they're going to have their really stable, long-term organization.
Yeah.
All these young players.
Yeah.
Masai Ujiri is this great GM. Like, it's going to be great for and then now she's like, what? I tried to tell her, I was like, look, I cover the league, so I will just talk to the visiting team if it's
right.
Not going to crap. But I will say there are things that make me intrigued because I started thinking about this in the middle of the year. Carl made these guys work well in his system.
Yeah.
Ty Lawson, if they retain Andre Iguodala, which is going to be a big old question mark, Gallo a little bit, not as much, and a few others I look at and go, especially, like, Ty is my big question. What if you put him in a traditional standard pick-and-roll offense and he's not running his ass up and down the court and the dribble drive? What if he actually gets to run traditional sets? And if they can get a coach to bring back Iguodala, I really like Iguodala in the same kind of thing. If you got Ty and Iguodala...
Iggy can create. Like, he's a good playmaker.
Yeah.
Whether
then,
he's creating shots for somebody else or he's getting to the rim.
Ironically, Iguodala really embraced Carl's thinking by the end of the year where he was like, oh, you're right, corner threes and shots at the rim are good.
Yeah.
We'll see if he reverts now and is like, mid-range jumpers for all! Right.
That Doug Collins comes back and he doesn't even know it.
That's the name that I'm like...
Oh,
no.
That would be hilarious.
Oh, no.
That would be a hilarious option.
Me trying to ask Doug Collins about synergy numbers and then him with JaVale McGee.
He's trying to get guys to take long twos and you're just like, why do you hate basketball?
Why? Coach! Coach, real quick!
You've been a part of the game for so long. Why do you hate it?
Coach, Matt Moore, CBSSports.com. Can you talk a little bit about hating basketball and everything that stands for? Everything good about it? I'll just do every other... I'll make the ultimate reporter question about him being the worst.
Coach, talk about being a jerk.
Just a jerk to basketball.
Yeah, talk about being a jerk to the game you're supposed to love.
Okay, so I like Heat tonight.
I like the Spurs tonight, but
I did pick the Spurs to cover. I think 5's too high. I like Heat by 3.
I would like a margin of 7 points in this entire series. And it goes 7 games. I don't think that's too much to ask. No big deal.
I will admit there's a part of me that I don't know if I can handle the overreaction to Miami again after 2011 was so bad.
If they lose?
Yeah.
I mean, that's going to fall apart quickly. Not the organization, but the discussion of if they lose this, James is a year away from free agency. Dwayne Wade's knee is not great. You know, Chris Bosh is whatever people want to pretend Chris Bosh is.
I can't write enough blog posts about it. We're not going to be able to produce enough content. We'll have to start another blog just to cover the Heat collapse.
Why are you guys taking our blood samples? Oh, no big deal. Just cloning. Just need to fix the workload.
Harper 2. I've got a 640 for you.
You guys seen Multiplicity? It's a great movie, and it's educational. So you got Heat in 6 with... what's your confidence?
80%.
I got Heat in 7 at a monster 3.4.
Actually, I think it's 70%, and the other 30% is Heat in 5.
Wow.
I don't think there's any way San Antonio wins.
Wow. This is... All right. I've heard a couple of people say the Heat do what the Spurs do, only better. And they do have the best player in the world. I've been saying this on the radio because I've done about 100 radio spots today. LeBron James has been the best player in the world for a while now. Over the last month, Tony Parker has been the second best player in the world.
Yeah.
And the way Tony Parker responds and the way they get him going will be interesting. Car alarm, I think that's our buzzer.
Okay, we're out of here, folks. I say that, you know, and that covers 100%. So me saying that, I don't think there's any way the Spurs win. That's from an analytical standpoint.
Right.
If the Spurs sweep them, I'm going to be like, oh, okay. Well,
that happened.
That happened. If the Spurs win in 5, I'm going to be like, all right, fair enough, good job. If the Spurs win in 6, I'd be like, you know what, they just proved to be better. If the Spurs win in 7, I'm going to say, hey, it was a coin flip.
Yeah.
Spurs came out ahead because they're a great team. I'm not going to be shocked at all by whoever wins the series. I just, when I started thinking about the matchups.
You just think the Heat are the favorites.
I just think the Heat are better.
Yeah.
I just think that they're the best team on the
planet. Well, the Spurs are underdogs. No one talks about the Spurs.
I'm throwing this can at you. Lobbing it at you. I hate that narrative. I hate it. Spurs fans want to feel like they are the scrappy young... I'm like, you have Tim Duncan!
The first thing I opened my computer today, got on Twitter, I saw you going off on that. I was like, oh, it must be the finals.
You have Tim Duncan, Tony Parker,
yeah.
Monta Ginobili, Greg Popovich, Danny Green, Kawhi Leonard, Matt Bonner.
Patty Mills,
Corey Joseph.
Patty Foster's Mills.
I'm trying to think who else is on their bench that I don't care about. Somebody else, right?
Boris Diaw? You mentioned him? I actually think Boris Diaw is going to be very important in the series.
What?
Yeah, I think he'll see a little bit of time on LeBron, which I don't think is... I think he's clever enough. He's round enough. It's hard to get around a guy that size. And watching him, like, it's crazy how talented Boris Diaw is.
It is. It's really absurd.
He's unbelievably talented. I don't think people realize how great that guy's skill set is.
There's so many things he does so well.
Yeah, he just doesn't care. He just wants to eat baguettes.
Yep.
And that's Boris Diaw. But I think he could have a big impact on the series. I think he's really good.
Who gets posterized in the series?
Thiago Splitter. For sure.
I think Diago gets some. Or Diaw gets some.
I think Chris Bosh.
I think Tim Duncan.
Tim Duncan's gonna?
I think James has gotten him before.
Oh, James definitely got him before when he was Cleveland.
Yeah.
Definitely. I mean, a big one.
Yeah.
Coming down the right side of the lane.
I think...
LeBron doesn't dunk on people anymore.
Yeah, not since the last...
He's a little too careful about it.
We're 2 months removed from Jason Terry, so let's...
Jason Terry's not a person, though. I've been very adamant about this, like, been very consistent on record. Jason Terry's not a person.
Not human being.
So he didn't dunk on anybody. He dunked on a flower. He dunked on a potted plant.
Now,
maybe the name of this podcast is NBA Finals, Jason Terry is a potted plant.
Jason Terry's a potted plant. For all the SEO wins in the world.
For all you botany fans out there, that's why you clicked on this.
So we'll be back tomorrow. Hopefully we'll have some guests in tomorrow.
Yeah.
To talk about game one and look forward to game two. I think we're going to try and do the Roy Hibbert challenge at some point.
Oh, definitely.
I might get you drunk. Well, tonight it's going to be hard because it's so late. Might get you drunk tomorrow night.
Yeah, Saturday.
We'll get you drunk and then we'll try. That'll be a great combination.
Yeah.
You drunk.
This is great to have on record for the podcast. This is exactly why CBS brought us here.
Family comedies. Enjoy the great family comedies on CBS this week. And also, catch out the vine of drunken Zach Harper yakking up Gatorade.
You've got great stuff on CBSSports.com right now about the the battle of the series. Great preview. You had good stuff from the shoot around today. I've got a thing on Ray Allen and his moments of clutchness and his compartmentalization of clutchness that I've been writing in my head for about 6 years
I'm
now.
I'm really proud of you for getting this finally out. It's like you passing a kidney stone.
I was waiting. He gave these comments after the first game, and I was like, oh, I want to use these. Like, I want to talk about this. I love what he said. And then I was like, the next great game he has, because he missed a big free throw in game one of the Eastern Conference Finals. It's like, the next good game he has, I'm going to use this. Like, I'm going to write this up, and that'll be, like, my justification of it. And then he sucked for the next five games. Like, just was awful. Shot, like, 29% from three.
Right.
Broke out in game seven, hit, like, 3 of 5 from three. Was huge in them separating themselves from the Pacers in the second quarter. And I was like, all right, now I can write it. And then, I don't know, it took a couple days. Got a little lazy.
I've been busy.
I've been on the radio nonstop.
What's funny is you actually haven't gone anywhere. You finally got settled down. You haven't been anywhere since Monday. You've just been hanging out in Miami.
Yeah, I've just been here, and oddly enough, I couldn't get any work done.
You're too busy. It's like burn notice. You're just too busy tracking down criminals.
Yeah, exactly.
I've got this thing on the Spurs and the quote that is in their locker room, which kind of defines their entire concept, and I was going to write it as a preview piece. Yeah, that didn't happen.
No.
So now I've just been like, oh, well, you know what? I'm going to save it, and if they win, it's going to be, this is the proof of, here's the example, I'll have more quotes for it. If they lose, they'll be, no matter what.
They will have this.
They stay with the process. I've already spun this thing exactly how I want it.
You have two drafts saved right
now. Exactly.
You just have to fill in how many games,
like the victory and session speeds. That's all I'm changing.
Oh, yeah, I think that's it.
All right, man.
This is awkward ending it in person. I feel like we should still be talking.
Should we shake a hand or...
No, that's it's too close to the bed for that. Maybe not close enough. All right, for Matt Moore, Zach Harper, thank you.